Welcome to News Talking. This is D.G. Martin. You know, losing a tooth is almost always bad news, but it's not as bad news as it once was now that a permanent dental implant can take the place of our old or damaged tooth. But I've always been curious, you know, what is involved? What happens? And then it's still a relatively new process for many dentists. How do they learn how to learn, and what do they learn, and how do we do it? And so we're fortunate that one of our neighbors, Dr. Mark Hunt, is the founder of the Triangle Dental Institute, which trains dentists, and his co-director, David Simpson, who's a retired faculty member at the University of North Carolina School of Dentistry, have agreed to come in and educate me. And you get to listen in. Mark and David, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Well, Mark, tell us about the background of the Triangle Dental Institute. How'd that come about? You were just practicing dentistry, and what's the deal?
Well, I had a friend who was on faculty at UNC. He was a radiologist, and he was early into the radiology field, and Bruce Howerton over in Raleigh. And Bruce called me at his house one day to show me what he was doing with 3D imaging. I'd never seen it before my whole life. And he was so excited about it. He's just the neatest guy and smartest guy. And so he got me into it and showed me what he could do. And I said, damn, Bruce, this means I could do implant surgery. And he said, well, why do you think I called you out here? He said, you need to get on it, you know. You
oh,
need to
really? Take well, how long ago was this?
Gosh, it was in probably 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. So not somebody else doing implant surgery, but somebody who's providing the background for that. Why did he care about what you were doing?
Well, he was going to start a series of implant imaging centers, 3D imaging centers. So he was really early in the radiology thing and helped, actually, I think he helped invent some of the systems they use for that. But he set up probably five different sites in North Carolina. And what they do is you can go there and have an image taken, and Bruce will interpret it for you. That way, if there's a brain tumor or something that you didn't notice because we're not trained to see that, Bruce knows all about that. So he can see that, and he can help you make guides and different kinds of
things. So his specialty is not dentistry. It's overall radiology.
Well, he's a dentist. He was endodontist to start with. Then he switched to radiology. And now he reads radiographs for dentists.
Well, what is the benefit of the why did the three-dimensional X-rays or radiology, why did that get your attention and make you believe that you could do something now that you weren't going to be able to do before?
Well, you know, there's a lot of mystique that was associated with implant surgery early on. As a matter of fact, early on when they first bought the more modern implant technique of the United States, Dr. Brandemark from Sweden came up with it, and he brought it over here and only trained surgeons to do it. So there was a reason for that, is that there's some risk involved. There's some what we call hard stop landmarks, things that if you hit, they have a consequence. Arteries that are 2 millimeters in diameter can cause some significant damage, and nerves that you can hit that can cause loss of sensation in your face. So there's, if you don't have a surgical background and you're not well aware of where those are, you can face risk to yourself and your patient. So with 3D imaging, you can see those things and you can measure them. The measurements are exact. And you can go in, you can open a surgical flap, and you can measure from the top of the bone directly down, and you know angles and you know location of the hard stop landmarks and how to avoid those and how to keep yourself safe. That's what we teach our students.
Well, you were not a surgeon. Is that right?
You know, most dentists, you get a license and you're a doctor of dental surgery, and so you do surgery. But you usually just take teeth out and maybe do some just minor surgery. It's just beginning surgery. Yeah, and that's what our course is all about. So we take doctors who are basically beginning surgeons, and we help them to make the path between that and becoming an intermediate surgeon.
Well, David, you've been a surgeon. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your expertise.
Right.
And so you know, people who have the expertise and they see these non-experts coming along, taking, you know, pushing into a field. I mean, do you have some mixed feelings about watch, or did you, I should say, did you have some mixed feelings about watching dentists who were not surgeons moving up into that field?
Well, I think there was a good deal of concern among specialists because initially, as Dr. Hunt said, the specialists were the ones that were doing dental implants. And when they first introduced the titanium type of dental implant here in the USA, Dr. Brandemark from Sweden, he's an orthopedic surgeon who really discovered the dental implant. They brought it over to the USA about mid-80s, and they were limiting it, the training on how to place these implants to oral surgeons and periodontists who were basically surgeons, do mostly oral surgery procedures. So for a long time, the general dentist was excluded basically from doing implants. But as time went on, say around the early 90s, some general dentists did start doing implants, and they have enjoyed doing it, and they developed a good bit of expertise at it. And in fact, some of the speakers in our course at the Triangle Dental Institute are general dentists who have been doing implants for probably 20 years, and they do just as good a job as our specialists because they've more or less specialized in it and do a lot of implants and also the various associated procedures like bone grafting of the dental ridge when you have an insufficient jawbone there to place an implant. A lot of times we have to do bone grafting, and these general dentists learn the techniques, and they take out the teeth, they graft the sockets. We usually graft the socket before we put an implant there.
Grafting means that you go through a procedure to enhance the bone structure so that it will hold the implant. Am I
right? Exactly. Because when you lose a tooth, if there's not any bone placed in the socket, many times the bone will become much less. There's much less volume of bone actually in the jaw, and so we see a lot of patients from time to time that come in with more or less a collapsed structure of the jaw. And we can't put an implant there until we actually augment the bone, do bone grafting. Well, and there's several different ways that's done.
I want to come back in a little bit and talk about what these people from Sweden brought to you all so that you could do this. Right. But I want to get Mark Hunt, who's got introduced to this via radiology and sort of had an epiphany moment saying, well, maybe I can do that if I can have this. So tell us about your first patient. With your first implant patient, how did you go about?
Well, of course, I immediately, when I had talked to Bruce, I immediately went and signed up for a course.
So you said, I can't do this. I got to learn how to.
No,
do it.
You, and what you were the just opportunities can't start out to the block? I mean, that would be unwise.
Available to you to learn, and what were the opportunities for you then? There wasn't any Triangle Dental Institute.
There was not, and I called around. There was a course in New York at NYU. There's one down in Georgia, the Georgia Max, of course. There was a course in Florida, and I had a good friend, our other course co-director, John Holland, and I called him on the phone, and I was thinking we'd go to Georgia, and he said, let's go to Miami. There's one down here, and the guy does a pretty good job down here. So we went down there, and we met a lot of interesting people.
And can I interrupt you one more time?
Pardon?
Before this epiphany moment where you said, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this, when you had a patient who had you were thinking about putting a bridge in or that needed a replacement tooth, where would, at some points you would recommend to them or associate with a surgeon or a periodontist to do the bone grafting and the specialty work involved?
That's exactly right. Jerry Patterson was here in Durham, and he was the go-to guy, the oral surgeon in our area who started off doing implants more than anyone else in our area.
So that was your custom, and you were thinking, well, some of these I'll be able to learn to do myself. If they're really tough, maybe I'll keep on referring those. I mean,
exactly.
What's going on in your mind?
Well, you know, that's what we've seen in the course, is that, as David said early on, there's maybe some pushback from some of the specialists who kind of felt like that maybe this was not going to be great for them. I think the way it's turned out is that when dentists are trained, they're so much more aware of what they can do, of what's available. What they tell me is they say it changed the way I treat my plan. It changed the way I thought about dentistry completely. So I don't even make plans the same way. So now they start to see more possibilities. They can see more what can happen. Now they're seeing that some of that they can do, some of that they know they can't do, but they know it's there. And they know they need to do it, and they want to be part of that treatment. So they refer out the difficult part, and then they do the easy part.
Well, I'm visiting with Dr. Mark Hunt and with Dr. David Simpson. We're talking about their training venture at the Triangle Dental Institute. We're going to learn how to do dental implants on the radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about dental implants. These are still, in my view, sort of a miracle that people can lose teeth and not having to have false teeth or bridges. They can get a new tooth. And Mark Hunt is the founder of the Triangle Dental Institute and his colleague, the co-director of that institute, David Simpson, who retired from longtime place on the UNC Dental School faculty. And so you're going to teach us, right, how to
sure.
do this. And so, Mark, I want to stick with you for just a minute and tell us how you learned at the course that you went to in Miami, as you're a dentist who wants to learn more. What was the learning process like?
Well, we went down, and at the time, and we've kind of changed it since then, there would be speakers that came on Saturday and Sunday, and it was a two-day course. And you would just hear a group of different national speaker circuit quality speakers who would come in and give you their take on how they did it. Everybody's got a little different way. You'll find that in this field, people go at things. One of our speakers says there's seven ways to heaven. Just pick one, and you'll get there. So this
in your course that you took, the emphasis was on speakers talking about how to do it.
Correct.
And not in practical coursework.
We did not have a lot of that. I don't remember us having very much hands-on at all. Now, there was somebody's office you could go to if you wanted to stand over your shoulder and watch him do surgery. But, yeah, and we did take advantage of that. We went by and helped and observed and that type of thing.
So before you ever did your first, you were doing watching and then maybe assisting another dentist who'd had that training do it.
That's absolutely correct.
I want to shift for just a second. And David, I want to come back now, Mark, to your journey. But one of the things that I found most interesting, David, when I talked to you earlier, is the history of dental implants, because for many of us, it's still, I don't want to say brand new, but it's still kind of the miracle stages that you can put a tooth, that you can take a tooth out, replenish the bone, put some kind of metal device in to hold it, and then attach a new tooth to it. But this the science of this came up in an unusual way. Will you tell us that story?
Well, I think what we're seeing here,
I guess what,
is,
and I'm going out, and anybody who's listening to this, when you talk about titanium, we're going to go out and try to buy some, because it's a tell us the role of titanium.
Well, it was a fairly amazing way that it was discovered, actually. This orthopedic surgeon we were talking about, who was the one that discovered that titanium was bone friendly, what he was doing was placing little cylinders in the skulls of rabbits so that they could microscopically look in through these little cylinders and see the ingrowth of blood vessels and tissues in the skull. He was studying bone formation. And when they finished their experiment, they were going to take these little cylinders out of the skulls. They were made out of titanium, a little cylindrical piece of titanium. Well, they found they couldn't screw them out.
What had happened?
Bone had actually, what we call osseointegrated, the bone actually grows to the surface of this titanium cylinder, and it locks it in there very strongly. And so that was a moment where they realized that we found something that's extremely bone-friendly and will actually integrate with the bone. And so that's what led.
He's an orthopedic surgeon. What good did it do orthopedic surgery?
Well,
surgery?
I'm sure it did a lot of good because nowadays, as you know, they're doing a lot of joint replacements and using a lot of
the binding metal that they use.
And a lot of metal for reconstructing the spine and things of that nature.
So you're teaching me. When I need a new hip or a new knee or something like that, the reason that they can put a metal into the bone wouldn't have happened if they used steel or something like that to hold. It's got to be, right now, titanium works. Other metals wouldn't work.
Right. Well, they did use other metals before they discovered titanium, but it was not as permanent, and many of those failed. And the same thing in dentistry. Dental implants have actually been around for many years, and the earlier ones were stainless steel and other types of metals, but they never really were very bone-friendly. The bone didn't
actually... They worked sometimes, though. They worked most of the time.
They would work, yeah, but most of them had a limited lifespan. Many patients would end up having to have them removed because they would get infected or they would loosen up, so they weren't serving the purpose, so they would have to take these out of the jaw. And when they did that, oftentimes it left quite a defect in the jaw. So the titanium was really unbelievable type of response to the bone that had never been discovered before.
Well, David, you mentioned earlier that the Swedish doctor who discovered this and his colleagues brought over this technology to the United States and insisted on having surgeons and other specialty dental folks in order to train. They weren't going to train other people. Right. Where were you when this was happening?
Well, I was
on the
faculty.
Had you done implants with stainless steel?
I had not done implants. Uh-huh. We knew they were out there, and we knew some people were doing them. And occasionally you would see a publication in one of the journals regarding these other types of dental implants. But they never were very attractive to us at the school because there were a lot of failures and not very predictable. So we just never had gotten into dental implantology until this titanium implant came along, and it was a huge paradigm shift in dentistry.
How did you get into it?
How did
the dental school and your colleagues and you begin to adopt this new procedure or potential?
Right. The Swedish people that had developed this implant came over and gave courses here to surgeons, and starting about 1984,
in the United States or in the dental school, not here, but
they were,
other places.
Yeah, they were done not always in schools, but some of them were done in dental schools, and then they had courses available, and as time went on, there were more and more courses available around the country. So I started doing dental implants around 1991 was when I believe I took my first course.
How did you get trained? Where did you learn how to do it?
I went to Boston. They had a course there, and we had a couple of days of didactic training. We didn't get any hands-on type of training. We got didactic training and saw a lot of slides of implant cases and some videos of surgeries being done and things of that nature, which allowed us to know what we were doing.
Were you by yourself in terms of your colleagues on the faculty, or did you have some people who were learning at the same time?
Well, actually, at the dental school, what happened was they started an implant team because they realized that implantology was becoming important, and we wanted to not be left behind at the school, obviously. So they had a representative from each department that would be involved in dental implantology. In some of the departments, there were two representatives. Like, for instance, oral surgery and periodontics, had two representatives on this team, and radiology was on it, and the restorative dentists, prosthodontists who did the restorations on the implants were involved. So we had a team that started up with about, I'd say, eight or 10 people, and we started doing implants at the school. And it was done by the faculty initially. They were learning themselves how to do it. And we would bring in patients and screen them. And then if they were candidates for dental implants, then we would set up time to the surgery. And as time went on and the faculty got trained, then we began to train the residents in the same techniques. And so oral surgery residents and periodontal residents were then getting trained for doing dental implants. And for many years, that's, in this area at least, the specialists were still the ones that were doing.
Well, it seems like that what you were, at least initially, you were developing a team approach in which you'd have an X-ray expert do it. You'd have an oral surgeon, I guess, or someone who would extract the tooth. You then have another specialty who would work with the necessary bone grafting that would go along with that. And you'd have another specialist who would come and put the titanium screw in. And then you'd have another person come in and put the replacement tooth. I mean, or maybe some of those were duplicated, but it took a village to.
That's right. And initially, that's true. We had different specialty groups that were involved, and they pretty much stayed within their specialty. Like the surgeons were doing the surgical placement of the implants in the jaw. They're also doing the bone grafting and sinus grafting sometimes, which came along a little bit later, but we actually are placing bone grafts in the floor of the sinus now if there's not sufficient height of bone there to place an appropriate sized implant. So the surgeons were doing that, and then the radiologists were making the CT scans and helping us interpret those. And then the prosthodontists who are in the business of doing crowns and bridge work, they were the ones that were doing the restorative dentistry on the implants after the bone had healed around the implant.
So it was a team effort. Complex and an expensive operation,
right.
if everybody's going to get comfortable. I need to take a break. When I come back, I want to ask Mark how now he's training individual dentists to do the whole thing.
Right, right.
We're talking about dental implants, and we're talking to two of the our leading experts, the nation's leading experts, in how to do it and how to train people to do it. Dr. Mark Hunt and Dr. David Simpson will all be back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin talking about dental implants. If you hadn't had one, if you're unlucky enough to lose a tooth, which you probably will be, I hope you're lucky enough to have an implant. And David Simpson, thanks for describing about how we got into that. And as before the break, it got to be kind of a complicated thing in the dental school because you needed the skills of different people. And now you and your colleague, Dr. Hunt, have the audacity to think that you can train individual dentists to do the whole thing with one person. And is that right, Mark? I mean,
well, not exactly. It's the specialty team approach in dentistry is alive and well, and we don't mean to downgrade that in any way. Yeah, there are many things that you can do safely as a general dentist and can be trained to do, and you can do very well. And
well, let me just say, before you deny what I suggested that you could do, is that I watched you in your school with one patient in one sitting. I watched you extract the tooth, put in bone grafting material, and place the titanium screw in your patient's jaw, leaving only the healing and the binding of the titanium screw, and it's all complete except for putting in the replacement crown, I guess, tooth. And so you really did the whole thing except for that one last step, and you would do that step later on. So you've trained yourself to do it in certain cases, to do it not only one dentist, but in one setting. Now, do you deny that?
It's not deniable, but here's the point. Yeah, we selected that case, and there are some cases are harder than others, and that's where the devil's in the details, you know. You've got to be able to diagnose what cases are able to have that done and what cases need some specialized care or some additional augmentation of the bone. What cases are high risk? Yeah, there is a lot to it, and it's not just a kind of a thing that you can sit down and learn in a weekend or two weekends, even if you're a dentist who's got a lot of experience. Yeah, it's something that you need to develop clinical judgment. You need to develop the mindset where you can see in your mind what's inside the bone, and you kind of know what's going to be there before you get there. You get to need to develop a feel when you are with that drill as to what you're hitting, medullary bone, which is softer, or cortical bone, which is harder, or how deep you are, or how fast this drill is turning, and you can see that, or what the torque is, and you can feel that, and just it's just a myriad of different things that go into developing that skill.
Well, this is interesting to me because both of you all said when you were first trained, you were trained by people lecturing to you about things, and you're talking about things that that you need the feel for. You need the judgment that comes from experience. And so how did you adapt the training at Triangle Dental Institute to take your judgment that you needed that kind of training? What do you do? And you can talk about pig's jaws if you want to.
We talk about, we do work with pig's jaws. The technique we use is we'll do a surgery. David and I do it as a team. And we'll do a surgery on Friday morning. And then we'll lecture, and it's interactive. We've got an operatory with a closed circuit feed, so our students can watch it downstairs. We usually have 55, 60 guys down there watching. And they can ask us questions, and we can pan in with the camera and show them how we mix different medications. And it's just amazing. And you said it was a miracle. I swear it. I do it every day, and I'll sit there and do it. I'll say, that is true. It is crazy. It just never stops to amaze you what is able to be done now through the technology that's just come about. There are growth factors. There are things that just allow you to heal bones so much better than you could 10 years ago. Or what David's talking about is when this came out in the 90s, 30 years ago.
David explained about the miracle of the titanium's ability to bind with, to marry up to bone so that you'd have a strong binding. The other piece of it that you all have both mentioned is sort of the bone reconstruction, the bone, what do you call it?
It's bone grafting. Augmentation.
You don't just take a piece of bone and graft it on like you would an apple tree or something like that. How does that bone grafting work? It was a strange thing to me.
Different ways to go at it. But what we teach is particulate bone, which is a ground-up human bone that's been freezed and dried and irradiated so that it's acellular and it's no rejection factors involved. And you take that bone and you wet it with the person's blood or with saliva and saline.
Saline.
Yeah, and you place it in these sites. And sometimes
sites?
Into a surgical site, where you've extracted a tooth.
Into the hole in your tooth where the tooth came out.
You can do that. That's the easiest one.
Okay. It's ultimately got to get hold of a bone. And then explain that. Once you put it in,
if you've got a hole in the tooth, that's just like filling up a cup. So you fill up that hole with
the hole in the jaw,
right? Yeah, and you fill up with the bone material. Yeah, if you have a tooth that's been extracted and no bone graft was done, then the bone will deteriorate and it'll get more narrow.
It doesn't naturally grow. It does something that's not the
tissue grows 10 times faster than bone. So if you take a tooth out, the tissue competes with the bone to fill in that space, and it wins. And what happens is that then it leaves a little piece of bone sticking up on the facial, and your body remodels that. So if you don't do a bone graft, a year later, you've probably lost 40, 50, maybe 60% of the bone that was available in that spot.
But otherwise, it's often just like if I'm taking a picture off the wall and pulling the hanger out, and there's a big hole in the plaster, and I put in plaster to fill that hole so that it's there. Essentially, the graft is
the plaster.
The plaster, but something else happens.
Well, let me comment on that. I think I mentioned before that the jawbone, if the tooth is not there, the jawbone starts to atrophy. And in fact, the dimensions of the jawbone are dependent on the teeth. As our teeth erupt into the mouth during tooth formation, they bring the bone with them. And
you mean like when I get my permanent teeth?
Yeah.
It's more than just that tooth going up. it's
right. The
bones
tooth, is actually responsible for maintaining that dimension. There's got to be enough bone around the root of the tooth to keep the tooth in there. And so if you remove the tooth, there's no stimulation to the bone since you don't have any forces applied to that bone. And it'll gradually atrophy. It'll be reduced both in the horizontal dimension as well as the vertical dimension. And so it creates big problems. When we see patients that have been missing teeth for years, some of them have extremely deficient jawbone.
Can you use the bone grafting technique
It will
work even if you've lost a tooth many years ago.
Right.
It just takes a little bit longer time to do that.
Yep. It's just it's something that's done widely now. Just practically everybody that's going to do dental implants is going to have to learn how to augment the jaw.
Well, let me get you. Maybe I better take a break. Maybe I'll know the answer to the question I'm going to ask you before I ask it in front of everybody, so it won't sound like a stupid question. But we're talking about dental implants and how you do them and how you train doctors or dentists to do them with Dr. Mark Hunt, the founder of the Triangle Dental Institute, and his colleague and co-director, David Simpson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about dental implants, about getting a new tooth that works and sticks with you. And our folks are really involved in this. Dr. Mark Hunt is the founder of the Triangle Dental Institute, which every year trains 40 or 50 or 60 dentists in the dental implant procedure. And his colleague and expert, Dr. David Simpson, are both here to teach me about this. And it's been great. I mean, what you've taught me is first of all that a Swedish development understanding that titanium binds, it'll stick, that you can use a titanium screw to put down in your jaw that will hold the tooth if you attach it, that's critical, that we've learned a lot about building bones in the jaw by using bone marrow techniques to build bone structure, and that there are developments in the way of imaging, x-rays, so that we can see 3D images, so that people who might have been afraid to go into the mouth, dentist to go into the mouth with the aid of the x-ray equipment, can have confidence that they can see where they're going. Now, those things have opened the door for more dentists to be able to do it. What else has happened that makes this procedure more widely available?
Well, let me comment on that, DG. I think one of the things that's really changed, not just implant dentistry, but dentistry in general, is digital technology. Because back when we first started doing implants, we didn't have CT scans like we have today. We used to have to get medical CT scans at the hospital, and there's a lot more radiation involved, and the images that we got were not as good as what we get nowadays with the newer types of what we call...
So it's not that I'm looking at x-rays as film, and
right.
Now you've got the whole wide availability of digital that would be a fourth factor that you'd
right.
add.
The computerized tomographic image, what we call a CT scan, provides the information we need to get the third dimension. Because when you look at a standard dental x-ray, you're basically looking at two dimensions. And so we need the third dimension so we can see the depth of the bone. We can see anatomical structures. We can actually make very precise measurements on the CT scan that allow us to know how close certain structures mm-hmm. are, such as nerves and blood vessels and sinuses and things of that nature that Dr. Hunt referred to.
That you can see with this 3D equipment, the thing that Dr. Hunt, that Mark told us about, that
right.
is a risk and would be a risk that you would hit a nerve or a blood vessel that could cause substantial damage. But now you've got some help in seeing where that is related
right.
to the drill or the equipment that you're using.
Yeah. And then the other thing that's come out of digital dentistry is that we now can make what we call surgical guides. We used to have to place the implants free-handed with our drill. And now, if you want to do this, you can actually go through a dental lab or one of the companies that makes these guides, and you can send them a CT scan of the patient's jaws, and they can actually provide a guide that you that will actually guide your drill to the sites where you're placing dental implants, so that you're confident that you're not going to hit a vital structure.
So it's not a freehand drill. You've got it. It's based on that person's jaw, that situation.
Exactly.
That it's not a matter anymore of some, sort of the art of judgment, but you've got a guide that is that you know is going to work.
Sure. Yeah, that's the idea. And so everything is changing, and it's all because of digital techniques. And even nowadays, the structures, when they restore the implant and place the teeth on it, the crowns can be done with digital technology. The framework, if we're doing something like a full arch restoration, the framework can be done.
I know what you're talking about, full arch.
Well, when we have a patient that is edentulous, in other words, if they're missing all of the teeth in one or the other jaws or both, you can actually restore that with dental implants, and you can use digital techniques to make a guide. Since you don't have any teeth in the jaw, it's more difficult to just come in and freehand the placement of an implant. It might not be at the right angulation or things of that nature. So you can do this with a guide that's been manufactured through digital technology to guide your drill and subsequently the placement of your implant exactly where you want it.
Well, I don't know the answer to this question, but I mean, it sounds like that they're using some of this 3D printing technology to respond to the information that they get digitally about the structure of the jaw that they can then manufacture something in three-dimensional.
That's right. You can make a guide to do your surgery, but you can also subsequently make crowns and abutments for the crowns out of digital techniques. And so we don't depend as much now on the laboratory technician sitting down, say, and carving the crowns out of wax before they cast the crown, that type of thing. They can now do it by taking a block of zirconium or some other type of structure that you want to make a crown out of, and they can actually digitally create that by having it ground out with a special instrument so that you don't have to cast it like we used to. Oh, we used to have to always cast a metal crown, and nowadays we're not doing that so much.
Well,
DG has gotten so good that you can take a 3D image, and then you can take an impression of a person's mouth and take a 3D image of that. You can upload it on the internet. You can send it to a group in California or Mexico or wherever. They can mill a three-dimensional copy of the person's mouth. They can then make a surgical stent that fits on top of it that's got a little hole that goes into it that guides your drill absolutely perfectly and make it go right in the right spot. It's really fantastic. But to me, even as much so is the work that's been done with biologics, is that you have now growth factors that you can put if you're doing bone grafts, because you can't put an implant unless you have the bone,
right,
no matter how
right,
good
right.
of a guy you have. So now you can develop the bone through use of different growth factors. So you've got the bone that you put in, you've got ways to support the bone, different techniques, and then you put growth factors in that make the bone
so that you not only have to put the graft material into the bone to replace or to enhance the bone structure that's available, but you can train the body to grow faster than it would have ordinarily.
Your body is amazing. When any part of your body dies, it's like it throws off a little life preserver to help the other cells survive. They've learned how to develop and concentrate those growth factors so that you can place those in the bone that you're putting in and make the bone just grow so much faster and harder and quicker and more dependably, you know.
Well, you all are great. Thanks for coming and telling us a little bit about the inside story of what you all are doing to give us new and better teeth. And it's not only that, you're building us better jaw bones. You're found a way that you can tightly connect our new teeth to the jaw bones, and that you can do all this safely and with great confidence. And
can I add one more thing?
Yeah,
there,
David.
Yeah. The reason the general dentists are starting to develop a lot more interest in doing implants is that they really have to, because dentistry is moving so fast because of implants and digital technologies that the older techniques that dentists depended on for so many years, like the dental bridge, is disappearing. Nowadays, most teeth that are missing are going to be replaced with implants. And so the general dentist, to survive, has got to learn how to do implants.
Well, those of us who've had the privilege of listening to you all talk about this now feel very confident that although we can't do the implant, we know what's going on when we visit our dentist. Thanks, Dr. Mark Hunt and Dr. David Simpson. And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.